morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to talk with Deacon Tony Klein. He is home briefly for the ordination of our new bishop, has a role in that as a deacon participating in the liturgy. And we're going to hear about his experience meeting the new bishop and also meeting the Holy Father recently. It's a great story. I hope you'll stick around for it. Renee Kranz will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings, though, for this Sunday. Emily Leadham with the first and second reading. Deacon Roger Height with the Gospel.
A reading from the book of Sirach. If you choose, you can keep the commandments. They will save you. If you trust in God, you too shall live. He has set before you fire and water. To whichever you choose, stretch forth your hand. Before man are life and death, good and evil. Whichever he chooses shall be given him. Immense is the wisdom of the Lord. He is mighty in power and all-seeing. The eyes of God are on those who fear him. He understands man's every deed. No one does he command to act unjustly. To none does he give license to sin. The word of the Lord. The beginning of the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, we speak a wisdom to those who are mature, not a wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away. Rather, we speak God's wisdom, mysterious, hidden, which God predetermined before the ages for our glory, and which none of the rulers of this age knew. For if they had known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, what eye has not seen and ear has not heard, and what has not entered the human heart, what God has prepared for those who love him, this God has revealed to us through the Spirit. For the Spirit scrutinizes everything, even the depths of God. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, I tell you, unless your holiness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall not enter the kingdom of God. You have heard the commandment imposed on your forefathers, you shall not commit murder. Every murderer will be liable to judgment. What I say to you is, everyone who grows angry with his brother shall be liable to judgment. You have heard the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. What I say to you is, anyone who looks lustfully at a woman has already committed adultery with her in his thoughts. You have heard the commandment imposed on your forefathers, do not take a false oath. Rather, make good to the Lord all your pledges. What I tell you is, do not swear at all. Say yes when you mean yes. And no when you mean no. Anything beyond that is from the evil one. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Renee Kranz.
California State University San Marcos has agreed to revise its student fee policy after a federal district court ruled last August that the university cannot block fees to pro-life students. The university said it will make sure funding decisions going forward are viewpoint neutral and also agreed to pay more than $240,000 in legal fees and other costs to settle a 2017 lawsuit filed against the university by the Alliance Defending Freedom on behalf of Students for Life of America. The pro-life organization brought the suit as a violation of the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech after its campus group could not get funding for an event with a pro-life speaker. The university had allocated $300,000 from mandatory student activity fees to the Gender Equity and the LGBTQA Pride Center on campus, but refused a request for $500 from the Students for Life group to bring University of North Carolina Wilmington Professor Mike Adams in for an event. In a private meeting with Pope Francis, Catholic patriarchs of the Middle East had an opportunity to sound the alarm regarding the survival of Christians in the region as a result of persecution, extremism, economic insecurity, and immigration to the West. They provided Pope Francis with an overview of the general conditions of their countries and regions, which include Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, and the Holy Land, particularly wars and crisis that have led to the emigration of Christians and the need to follow the faithful pastorally in their adopted Western countries. They also presented the Pope with a more detailed memorandum at the February 8th meeting at the Vatican. The Vatican did not comment on the meeting, but in a statement, Cardinal Ray said he was very happy about the Holy Father's awareness and concern regarding the Church's affairs in the Middle East and the issues they face, as well as the importance of the presence of Christians, their role in the mission in coexisting with Muslims. Pope Francis praised the Knights of Columbus for their charitable efforts and thanked them especially for helping Christians in the Middle East. I thank all the members of your order for seeing in our persecuted and displaced brothers and sisters of that region, neighbors for whom you are a sign of God's infinite love, he said in an address February 10th to members of this fraternal service organization. A delegation led by Supreme Knight Carl A. Anderson and including the organization's board of directors was in Rome to celebrate the 100th anniversary of their active presence in Rome. Pope Francis reminded telecommunication firms and service providers of their responsibility to help fight human trafficking. The Pope reminded people of the February 8th International Day of Prayer and Awareness Against Human Trafficking after praying the Angelus February 9th with the visitors in St. Peter's Square. Everyone must work together to fight human trafficking, a plague that takes advantage of the most vulnerable, the Pope said. Everyone's commitment is needed. Institutions, associations, and educational groups. Criminal organizations are increasingly using the latest forms of communication in order to lure victims through deceit, he said. With all the news a Catholic can use, I'm Renee Kranz with the Bishop's Bulletin.
All right, Renee, thanks for that. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by the Reverend Mr. Deacon Tony Klein. I still got to get used to saying that, Tony. It's going to take me a little bit. And then, like you said, about the time we get used to it, it'll be Father Tony Klein.
That's
so
right.
Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Sure. So Deacon Tony is in his final year of seminary preparation, on track to be ordained in May.
That's right.
And I'm sure just a whole lot going on in your world in preparation for all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of the sort of practical stuff, but then there's just also, I mean, I think the more important part is just sort of the spiritual preparation, mental preparation, all of the sort of realization of, you know, everything that I've known is going to change in about 3 months.
Yeah.
Any way of living that I've lived before is going to change. And but it's exciting. It's a really exciting time.
Well, we're grateful to have the chance to talk to you about a couple of things in particular that we're going to talk about this morning. But we should set the stage, of course, you're home briefly, because to help with the ordination, to be a part of the ordination of our new bishop, Bishop Donald DeGroote, who by the time people are hearing this actually will be Bishop, Donald DeGroote, which is exciting. It's always exciting to have, this kind of life, put into the church, I think. Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Even just last night at the airport, a gentleman walked up to me. I was in clerics and he just kind of looked at me like he knew me. I didn't know him. And he said, it's a big week for us, huh? And he's from Yankton. And so it was a cool realization that it's not just, you know, the seminarians. It's not just the people that work at the chancery. It's not just people like that live in Sioux Falls or go to the cathedral that are excited about this. But really the whole diocese in a way is really looking forward to having a new shepherd this week.
And that takes nothing away from Bishop Swain. I know obviously your vocation as you've been formed has happened entirely under the tutelage of Bishop Swain. So
yeah, I remember, I think it was seventh grade. I was in Spanish class, and it was the day of his ordination. And our teacher put it on the TV, and I was really confused. I didn't know much about what an ordination was, and I remember seeing him lie down and just kind of. I mean, it was just this sort of weird realization now of looking back at that and that I remember that so vividly.
Right.
Never really expecting that he would be one to accept me into seminary and to, you know, give me a call to orders to the diaconate. And it was sort of up in the air of whether or not he would ordain me a priest or if we'd have a new bishop by then. But yeah, I'm really grateful for all that he's done for the church, for our diocese, but in a particular way for me and the support that he's given me.
And you mentioned you have not attended a bishop ordination, episcopal ordination prior to this. You may be surprised to see how similar it is in a lot of ways to the ordination of a deacon or a priest. There's obviously a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
So, and in a few months, you'll be doing, you know, the same rituals again.
Yeah.
Many of them. So
yeah.
Great preparation for it. In particular, this morning, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of opportunities that you had recently. And if folks have seen their February Bishop's Bulletin, they can imagine who I'm talking to this morning, because your picture, along with Deacon Michael Kappeman, another of our transitional deacons, is in this, I think, just fantastic photograph of you meeting Pope Francis and our new bishop standing in the background with the look on his face that's just, I don't know, pride, I think, is the look that I saw in him, that he was kind of presenting the two of you to Pope Francis. What was that like?
It was a really amazing morning.
I'll bet it was.
I mean, so about 2 days before that, actually a day before that, I met Bishop-elect for the first time. I'd never met him before. Heard a lot about him, but he had gotten in on Sunday, so we met and talked quite a bit and really got to know him. And I was just pretty much immediately edified at the care that he had for me and just in getting to know me and wanting my best, just really always having my best in mind. And so just from that on Sunday to meeting my, you know, future shepherd, to then on Monday going to meet the Holy Father with him and with a classmate I'll be ordained with, it was just really like a surreal, surreal moment.
Did you know that was going to happen? I mean, did you have a sense that you were going to get to be a part of that?
Yeah. So because the ad limina visits have been going on for the last few months. So all the bishops from the U.S. have been coming in groups kind of by region. And so every time they come, they all have a meeting with the Holy Father, and the seminarians have all tagged along for about a 2-minute meeting at the beginning with him, and then they kick us out, and then they get down to the business.
yeah, exactly right. So you knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And even if our bishop hadn't been able to be there, or our bishop-elect hadn't been able to be there, would you still have had a chance?
I think so. I think we would have, I mean, maybe probably had someone go.
Tagged along.
An administrator or something.
Yeah.
That would kind of go, or a vicar that would go. And I think we would have been able to sneak our way in. But it was pretty cool, pretty providential, I think, to have our new bishop be there and for me to kind of meet both of them almost simultaneously.
And you mentioned Deacon Michael was with you, so the two of you got to do that. Walk us through it. What was it like, and, you know, what did you experience?
So we're all in this waiting room, a beautiful waiting room in the Apostolic Palace. And it was all the bishops from Region 8, mm-hmm. so North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota, and then all the seminarians that were in Rome at the time, which was a big amount because the deacon class from St. Paul Seminary was there, as well as a number of students from St. John Vianney College Seminary that were there studying abroad, plus then all of us that were at the North American College. So there was a really big group, and we walked in, and one of the workers there said, "Is there anyone left in the seminary today?" he thought they all had come along. So it was a great testament, I think, to the faith that we have here. Just the fact that we had so many
good numbers.
Yeah. So many guys there. And so as we're kind of walking in, you know, sort of anticipating what it's going to be like, you know, you have about two sentences maybe to say to him, and Pope Francis's English isn't excellent.
Right.
So Bishop DeGrood introduced himself, I think in English. And then I kind of just said a few words on behalf of the seminarians to him in Italian. And then we all went through and shook his hand. And I told him specifically, as Bishop-elect was standing next to me, I said, "Thank you for giving us a new shepherd." I said, "1 month from today, he'll be made our new bishop." And then he turned, looked at him, and he said, "Oh, yeah, the oil is still missing." So it was great to see his sense of humor. And just kind of cool to be there to thank him for sending us another good shepherd to have.
And that you are able in Italian to probably get a little bit clearer. As you said, his English is not real strong, so he's able to communicate a little bit better in the Italian, and you're able to understand and kind of be the translator, I suppose.
Yeah. They had a translator there for when he addressed us as a group, but when it was just the group of us, I said, "We're seminarians from Sioux Falls. This is our new bishop." I said, "We're praying for you. Please pray for us. Thank you for all that you've been doing for the church and for leading us."
It is such a reminder, I think, of the universality of our church when you have a moment like that with the Holy Father, who, you know, you wonder, can he possibly know, you know, where Sioux Falls even is? And in a way, it probably doesn't matter because he knows that there are faithful here, and they too are part of the universal church. He's the connecting point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing that I was talking with Bishop DeGrood too, as we were going through, his life is like a life of meeting people every day, and that's probably the highlight of their life, one of the highlights of their life.
Absolutely.
And for him to be able to do that over and over, and from what you can tell, like, not that it gets old, you know, every time it seems like he's just very happy and content to be meeting whoever he's meeting at the time, is a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that really struck me, is it didn't feel like we were just another group or just another number, even though in a sense, like, in his schedule, we are. But he was so attentive to us and just looked us right in the eyes. We shook his hands.
Yeah.
And was very interested at first to hear us speak rather than for him to say something to us.
Do you think that's the Holy Spirit? I mean, is that the grace that comes to the vicar of Christ to be able to do that? It almost has to be, doesn't
it? I think
it?
Probably that's an aspect of it. I think probably part of it too is just good natural virtue.
Yeah.
I mean, grace works with that, obviously, and
yeah.
affects it. But I'd say that has to be something of an office like that, or even of a bishop, you know, where in a way you kind of seem like a celebrity, you know, quote unquote, where everyone knows you, but you don't necessarily know all of them. So to be able to really see each person as a person and not just as, you know, another meeting to have or another person that you have to, you know, shake their hand or something with is a real grace.
Now, I know this wasn't the first time that you've been in proximity to the Holy Father, because you also had another special moment about a month before?
7 days before.
7 days before. 7 days before. Did he remember you?
He did not remember me. Or at least he didn't say that he remembered
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about that a little bit, what you did.
Yeah. So in early December, I got an email from a priest at St. Peter's who kind of directs the choir and is in charge of some of the liturgy. And he said, would you be able to deacon the Mass for the Holy Father on Epiphany and chant the gospel? Or sorry, not the gospel. Chant the proclamation of Easter and the movable feasts.
The calendar.
Which yeah. I had to look up what that was because I've never seen that done. So I actually was not going to be in Rome at that time. So I said, I think I can do it, but I have to check. So I had to kind of readjust a couple travel itinerary things. And fortunately, I was able to do that and to make it back. So I went, on Monday, January 6th, I went and was one of, there were about four or five of us that were deacons, but we all got to shake his hand before Mass and sort of the same sort of thing. I said, thank you for all that you've been doing. And I didn't tell him, I'll see you next week. But it was cool to kind of meet him in the two different circumstances, because the first one, it was right before the Mass and the liturgy.
Right.
And so he was, during the liturgy, he's very much more like reverent, and not quite as, you know, what we see in some of the pictures and videos, you know, where he's like very jubilant and smiling and
effusive,
like overflowing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was cool to see he was very much sort of in the moment, in the zone. And during the Mass, especially, we could tell, and it was cool. I got for the consecration, I was right kind of behind him at the altar and got to receive Holy Communion from him, receive the sign of peace from him, and just things, if you would have told me, I mean, 2 months ago or 6 years ago that I would ever be doing, I would have said, yeah, right. And then 2 weeks in a row, I got to meet him. So it was quite a blessing.
You could get used to that.
Well, people, the next week, I called my sister on a Monday, and she said, so, did you meet the Holy Father again today?
When are you going to see the Holy Father? Yeah.
I said, no, I don't know if that'll happen again.
Yeah.
It was just a really kind of fortunate couple weeks.
I think about what that must have been like for you in the course of just a few days, the first encounter with the Holy Father, the encounter with your new bishop, the encounter again with the Holy Father, along with your brother, who's going to be ordained with you in May. I mean, that just kind of like sets up your future in a way, doesn't it? I mean, you can only look, in a sense, look forward to what that all leads to.
Yeah. And I in one sense, it could lead you, I think, to sort of like high aspirations or something like that. But really, I think it made me look at home a lot more and just made me, rather than looking at, like, I took those experiences and was just very grateful for them, but never in that sense losing sight of where I came from.
Yeah.
And so I was really excited just to sort of have that realization of, like, Jesus was born in Nazareth, and for us, Sioux Falls is the big town, but for most of the world, Sioux Falls is nothing.
Right, right.
And so for me to be able to say, like, you know, yeah, we're not, I'm not from New York. I'm from Sioux Falls, and I'm excited to be with the people in Sioux Falls. I'm excited to go back to the place where the faith was nurtured in me at such a young age. I'm grateful to hopefully bring all these experiences back in some ways that I can.
I can't tell you over the years doing these kind of interviews with men like you who are about to be ordained or who have been away studying for a while, how often I've heard that longing to be back home is very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think there's always something with, I mean, you hear distance makes the heart grow fonder. And I think it's really been true. So since I've technically been studying for the diocese, I've been away from the diocese the whole time. So,
yeah, the irony of that,
for seven
right?
and a half years, the whole time I've been, other than the summers, really, I've been away. But I wouldn't say that that's diminished in any way my love for the diocese. I think it's really enhanced it a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's, between now and the end of May when ordinations are set, what's left? What do you need to do?
So I still have some school.
Yeah.
Still have some classes, all those things, cross the T's, dot the I's. But other than that, it's sort of a lot of just kind of preparations to make sure I know how to do day-to-day things, make sure I know how to celebrate Mass validly.
Yeah.
Make sure, that I'm comfortable celebrating Mass and practice to whatever degree I can, the other sacraments and confession and anointing, all marriage prep, trying to get some of those things together, as well as just some of the practical elements of ordination, of having, knowing that a lot of people are coming, and thanking my parents a lot for taking the brunt work on a lot of that. But
I think they're pretty happy to do it.
They are, but it's a lot. It's almost like, it's in many ways like planning a wedding. Yeah. Fortunately, the church does a lot of the wedding part.
And yeah.
We're kind of left with some of the reception stuff and first Mass. But yeah, a lot of it is just sort of preparation stuff like that. But then I think for me more personally, a lot of the preparation will just be looking back on the last 7.5 years in gratitude of what the Lord has done. And really how he's made it clear to me that while at first this was something that I was like, God, if you want me to do this, I'll do it. I think what you have in mind for me is what's going to make me happiest. But you got to let me know that it is.
Yeah.
And just how over the course of time of formation, of getting to know him more, getting to know myself a lot more, and really getting to know what the priesthood actually is, just seeing how at one point, I was able to kind of say to God, I'll still do this because, like, if you want me to do this, but I think I'm realizing I actually have the desires for this too.
Yeah.
And so kind of seeing the two wills really merge together. So just looking back to reflect on that more, and before my retreat for diaconate ordination, I was just really amazed at the number of people that came to mind, mm-hmm. not just from the last 7-8 years, but really from my whole life. And even before my life, of thinking of my grandparents and the faith that they really passed down to my parents and their generation that has continued to pass down to me, and all my grandparents have passed away, but just knowing how many seeds I think they planted, but also how effective their prayers were.
Mm-hmm. And probably still are.
And are. And so I went to Wakanda over the summer, and I gave a little reflection on vocations and my story and stuff. And it was cool afterwards just hearing the number of people that came up and said, oh yeah, we remember Grandpa Jim. We'd get in the car and we'd start the rosary right away and things like that that... I didn't always know about them, but just how strong of a faith that they had. And so there's just, I think, a lot to be grateful. That's something I want to kind of focus on over this semester is, there's a lot to look forward to, but there's so much, I think, that I'll never even know in this life of how God has been preparing me for what's to come.
I think there's a lesson in that really for everybody, not just for you as you prepare for ordination, but frankly, for all of us as we live our lives. Yeah, we're always looking forward a bit. Boy, to be grateful for what we have and where it came from.
Yeah.
I think we miss that a lot of times.
I think life can be so fast. I mean, everything is new. There's always noise. And I really think everyone, the world would be better. I think it's a very human thing, I think, just to kind of sit in silence sometimes and to think. We're rational beings. We're given the gift to actually think and to be able to recollect and reflect on what's happening in our lives rather than just kind of being instinctual beings. And so to be able to do that, I think is something that all of us would benefit from, of looking, there's so much for us to be where we are right now, for you and I to be in these chairs right now, that we're so blind to.
Yeah. And in a world where there is so much focus on self, to be grateful for the other is, it's almost a radical thing.
Yeah.
Which is sad to say, but it's almost a radical thing. So I'm grateful for you to talk about it in the way you have this morning. About a minute and a half left this morning. I always like to have you say a word, if you would, for those that maybe have a niggling that maybe they ought to be trying this seminary thing out, or maybe somebody that knows somebody. What's your best advice?
For me, I mean, it really started when I had seen a couple guys enter seminary right out of high school. And so that at least showed me like, oh, that's actually
that's a thing.
A thing. It's a possibility. But I've still, you know, was kind of afraid to dip my toe in the water. But the biggest thing initially was just more constant prayer. Just going to the chapel a few more times, at the beginning, it wasn't really for long periods of time, you know, just 5 minutes stopping on my way home or something. And then the biggest thing my senior year was visiting the seminary to see what it was like. I think if you're going to go to a college, a lot of times you want to visit it to make sure you know what you're getting into, to kind of see the life there. And for me, visiting the seminary broke down a lot of misconceptions that I had about seminary. And it was, I think I had a lot of friends in seminary that will be ordained, and a number that have also left, but all of them look on their time in seminary. None of them look at it as a waste, I don't think. Yeah. I think you would say the same.
It's been, I don't know, almost 30 years more than 30 years since I was there. And I'd absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely agree. Not a waste of time at all. Our thanks to Deacon Tony for taking time and joining us today. I should mention, because I am proud of him, he is a godson. It's the same last name, people notice, but he is my godson, I'm very proud of him. He's a wonderful young man.
Yeah.
Looking forward to his service to our diocese. We're past ordination, Renee. It's hard to believe, but still opportunities for people to get to know our new bishop.
Yeah, he'll be traveling around the diocese to several places. So check your bishop's bulletin. It has all the dates, times, and parishes where he'll be.
And I think it's online as well if people want to find any of that information and some photos. We should by now have photos up as well from the ordination. So looking forward to that. That's our time for Catholic Views today. We'll be back next Sunday.